We woke up every day at the crack of dawn to board a school bus that could have doubled as a refrigerator. We imagine ourselves as meat, raw chicken thighs, and ill-fitting pantsuits, jostled as the school bus hurtled through dead country landscape powdered by the first snow. We hired Frank the janitor to drive us. Why Frank? We asked ourselves each time we boarded the bus with gritted teeth smiles and a lukewarm, "Hi, Frank." It was always Frank, which was strange to us, because Frank had many skills, and bus driving was not among them. He drove our bus like road markings were just suggestions, like he was playing a game of Mario Kart. We suspected Frank had ulterior motives. One meet in January, these suspicions were confirmed when freshman Jacob Crowley forgot his dress shoes on the bus. When he went to look for it in the parking lot, it was nowhere to be found. Coach Anderson explained that Frank got paid extra for driving us, and he usually went to see a movie while we were competing. We were furious. This was injustice of the highest order. We were busting our asses over geopolitical crisis, enduring the wrath of dry throats and chapped lips, suffering through congealed grease of room temperature pizza and stale potato chips while Frank was kicking back and catching fire with a large buttery popcorn. Well, how else could you make driving a busload of whiny teenagers to speech meet sound appealing? Coach Anderson wanted to know at least basketball games provided some source of entertainment. Us, we were boring and whiny. Can you really blame Frank? Yes, said Jacob Crowley, who was stilling himself to compete in men's Uggs. You can really, really blame Frank. I don't think you should blame anyone, said Denise Palladino in her floaty voice. Miss Junior Teen, Pennsylvania, 2014. Denise was genetically bred in a lab to be a cheerleader. None of us, Denise included, really knew why she was in speech team. All of her outfits were carefully color-coordinated, but there was always some accessory that didn't go over well with judges. A headband with a weird flower, a necklace that was too shiny, an earring that was too dangly. Denise didn't appreciate poor sportsmanship, dissent in words with more than three syllables. Blame whoever you want, said Nadine Kaufman, senior and team captain. She was this cynical most of the time, except for when she was focused on something else, like lint rolling our suit jackets and delivering punchy lines from action movies. We've got company. Company arrived in the form of the team from Peabody High School in perfectly pressed and tailored suits. The Peabody team was like a cult. Actually, no, they were a cult. Their duo teams color-coded their shirts. Some of them wore pearl necklaces, but only those sanctioned by their coach. Those who had qualified for nationals got to wear red pantsuits. We watched jealously as the royalty paraded their tailored suits as though the high school hallways were fashion runways. Their queen bee was Shelby Hanover, 110 pounds of frizzy blonde evil. She glared at us during rounds like we just slaughtered her dog. But in the hallway, she would gush about how much she loved our piece, how brave we were to perform it after that girl qualified for nationals with it last year, how she thought there was someone else in the event doing the same piece, but you know, that's just how it goes. The tension between our teams was complicated by a double agent. Our assistant coach, Claudia, had been recruited from Peabody a few years ago. We all knew that Claudia preferred Peabody. She would never say it, but if she had to kill one of our teams, who would it be? Yeah, that's what we thought, Claudia, although we never articulated these ultimatums because they were insensitive considering that Claudia herself could bite it at any minute. She was old as hell. She sometimes talked about her husband being in the war, and we assumed she meant the Civil War. Coach Anderson panicked when Claudia was a few minutes late or when she didn't answer the phone. She could have been sprawled on the floor, lifeless. And how would we know? We were too busy complaining. We were pros at complaining, mostly because we had a lot of material. Our feet hurt, we got migraines, and we were tired of waking up so early. We didn't even like speech. Why did we do it? Was our self-worth so diminished that we subjected ourselves to this weekly ordeal? Apparently so. We kept coming back. The Saturdays would wear on and on. We spoke for 10 minutes, 3 times a day. Some of us would bring homework to do in between rounds, which, save for a few Spanish worksheets, proved fruitless. We spent the time gossiping about the Peabody kids. Did you hear that Ellen Smith got a boob job? Did you see that Michaela Roberts was wearing a colored pantsuit even though she didn't even qualify for nationals? Sure, it was unproductive. We didn't have our lives figured out, but who did? Revenja Jahav did. He was the only guy on our team we hated. We hated him, and we feared him, and we loved him. We hoped he would loan us money when he would inevitably out-earn us in adulthood. At the end of the day, there would be awards, and we would stand on stage and receive our ribbons. For some reason, most of us couldn't place higher than fifth, except Revenja, who had somehow consistently gotten first place since his first meet. We had to watch as Shelby collected her first place ribbon, fuming quietly on stage as she waved to the crowd and her mom took a picture of her from the front row. And then the team trophies. Most of the time, we didn't get a team trophy. And when we did, they were small. It was okay, we told ourselves. We were a small team. We had a lot of freshmen. We lacked experience. Maybe next time. After particularly grueling meets, we would sometimes convince Frank to stop at Starbucks. When baristas asked for our names, we liked to give fake names. Sometimes we planned out theme names, like that time everyone was a character from Harry Potter. We ordered a Java chip frappuccino for Hermione, and a grande Americano for Dumbledore, and a hot chocolate for Dobby. It was great until we started fighting over characters. Revendra thought it was unfair that he consistently got stuck with the Patel twins just because he was brown. "But you are Indian," pointed out Ethan Stimley. "I'm also not a girl," said Revendra. "I'm also not two separate people." "But Harry Potter is white." "Yeah, and typecasting is unfair," said Revendra. "Like, how would you like it if you kept getting Snape just because you're a jerk?" As the season wore on, the coffee became the least of our worries. Why couldn't we place higher than fifth? We were capable, hardworking, intelligent. Although, sure, sometimes we wrote speeches the night before meets. We were sure that Judge was the mother of one of our competitors, which wasn't supposed to happen, and she was purposely discounting us to benefit her own child. Or she was just racist. Before we knew it, it was March, and state was coming up. We practiced more than ever, but we never stopped making old mistakes, which had become a part of our routine. Coach Anderson made the same notes. "You keep making that weird gesture. Ethan, I don't know what you're doing with your hands. You need to walk less mechanically." "Nadine, and I told you months ago, that joke was racially insensitive, and you need to cut it." God, we thought each time we left the practice room, this was stressful. Months of practicing, an entire season of stress, and it all built up to this. Finally, it was the big day. We boarded a bus and drove 2 hours south to Indianapolis. Some of us hoped Frank would crash, and then we'd die and never have to compete. We arrived at Fisher's High School with big dreams and sweaty armpits, too nervous to eat. The school was massive. What if we got lost and couldn't compete? Or what if we died halfway through a round? Was there protocol? Would we receive medical care? Or would the judge sigh, blasé, and call up the next competitor? Coach Anderson tried to calm us down as the Fishers coach laid out the day's agenda. We would compete in 3 rounds and then a semifinal, in which most of us would be eliminated, and the top 6 would then go on to the final, and we would be ranked from there. Elimination sounded both terrifying and strangely appealing. It meant we wouldn't have to compete anymore. Would that have been so bad? We waited for the next round, like lambs waiting for slaughter. Sometimes we would pass each other in the hallways and give a nervous wave. We were in this together. Claudia encouraged us to maybe eat a granola bar or something. We looked dead. As the day went on, we gradually crashed and burned. It was like watching as your army fell in battle. Peabody was crushing us, and we all knew it. Ethan stopped going to his first rounds after round one. What was the point anyway? Semifinals were posted. Predictably, we were almost all eliminated except for Revendra and Nadine, and we were elated. We cheered them on then waited around in the cafeteria while they competed. The stale, pizza-smelling air was charged with tension, as though we were waiting for a baby to be born. We hugged them as they exited their rooms. We waited together as results were posted. They hadn't made it. We weren't terribly surprised, but we consoled them anyway. It had been a long, hard day. Just as we did with any other meet, we sat together in the auditorium for awards. We didn't have any finalists, so it was especially tiring, standing up and clapping for every event. The only hope we had was sweepstakes points, but even that hope was dwindling. That was okay. We were fine. We chewed our fingernails as they announced fourth place, and then third place, and then second, and somehow, with 8 points, first place, and the state champions went to us? Us? Was this a joke? Had we actually beaten Peabody? No. We had misunderstood. We were in a different division entirely. Peabody was in Class A. They won with 283 points. Shelby was on stage collecting their trophy, a golden sculpture that dwarfed our teacup-sized prize. They were better than we were. They had always been better. What sort of silly, deluded dream world had we been living in? We were mortals to Peabody's Mount Olympus. We would never get better. Dejected, we decided on haciendas for our consolation meal. We ordered extra queso to nurse our sorrows. Jacob Crowley spilled some salsa on his dress shirt, and when Nadine went to dab it, Jacob shook his head. It was not worth it. None of this was worth it. He would burn the shirt at home, along with his extempt research and a year's worth of The Economist. A funeral pyre for ambition. After we had wiped our mouths and rummaged for our wallets to pay the bill, our waiter emerged with a line of other employees behind him, all in sombreros. "I understand today is someone's cumpleaños," he said, much too loudly and cheerfully. "Feliz mariachi estoy fiesta." He conjugated that wrong, Revenja pointed out. Plus, it was no one's birthday. The waiter placed the sombrero on Nadine's head. The waiters began to sing off-key, "Happy Hacienda birthday to you, to you." This was it, we thought. It didn't matter that we weren't first. We were first, our first, and we were all together at a table in Hacienda. And it was starting to look like spring outside. Peabody kids didn't know love. They saw each other as commodities. They would never know the joy of sharing a sombrero and a special birthday cookie supreme. Our pantsuits smelled like sweat. Our legs ached and our throats were sore. Our faces pockmarked by acne, our mouths stained with enchilada sauce. Most of us sucked at the only extracurricular on our resume. We were mediocre, but that was okay. We would get better next year, or maybe the year after that. It didn't matter to us. There was still plenty of time.